The Office of the State Historian is proud to present the New Mexico Digital History Project podcast series.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to apologize. I've been having computer problems all day and seems to continue here since my PowerPoint has already frozen up, so it's just stuck on the one picture, which is fine because this is Dr. Dean Jett, who is the main topic of my research down at New Mexico State. In December 2006, I began researching the Dean Jett letters at the Rio Grande Historical Collections at NMSU through a grant from the New Mexico Historical Records Advisory Board. This grant required limited research and organization to be done on the Dean Jett letters that were written during World War II. While working on this project, I had to create a simple database where they wanted a list of all of the soldiers that he corresponded with during World War II, what they did, any awards that they received, where they fought, and all that. So I ended up having to read over thousands of letters that were written between him and these students that had been at New Mexico State. And out of the thousands of letters, I ended up entering just over 1,000 names of actual students that served during World War II. Near the end of the grant, I came upon a group of letters that were between Dean Jett and a group of men that had been there from May of 1943 to March of 1944. And they were part of a program called the Army Specialized Training Program, or ASTP. And the object of this program was to send soldiers that were already in the Army to colleges, depending on which college it was, for specific training. And the ones that were sent to State College, as it was known at that time, were sent there for engineering courses. When I began going through the letters, I was trying to find out how many students there were because I couldn't find a list. So I went through class rosters that Dean Jett had and through the yearbook, and I came up with 538 names. So I was like, okay, that's a lot of letters, but I still hadn't come across the majority of these letters. And then I came across the catalog book that had a list of all the students, and in the very back of this book, it had a list of all of the men that were there throughout for this program, because some of them were there for the whole 9 months, others were there just for a couple of weeks, and had a list of all of them, and it turned out there were 830 men. And Dean Jett attempted to write to each of these men at least once. And I ended up finding the folders of the letters, and there were folders for all of these men except for 11. There were just 11 that were missing. So he attempted to write to all of these men at least once. And the majority of them wrote back to him. A few of them wrote back stating that they were not interested in corresponding with him or receiving a newsletter from him. And what his goal was, and in March 23rd, he sent a letter out to all of these men that he had addresses for, and it read this: I'm enclosing the first installment of a newsletter, of which I would like to write many installments. But I need your assistance with news about yourself since you left State College. I would also like to have a summary from the time you entered the armed forces up to the time you came to State College. I have written to all of your parents asking for your addresses, and so the first installments will be chiefly addresses with such news as your parents have given me. This is a plan I have contemplated for some time, but have delayed on account of financing it. My own budget for the year is already exhausted, so that anything I do must come out of my own personal funds. The cost for stenographers, postage, stationery, stencils, mimeographing, etc., goes into money when you are writing to nearly 1,000 people. By the time I have mailed this first installment out to all of you, the cost will have amounted to over $150. Of course, that will not be the case with each installment of 10 pages each, for getting the first information is the greatest cost. I know you will say to yourself, well, why does he do it then? Because I like to do it. Also, I feel that each of you is interested in what many of the others are doing and where they are. I have carried out this plan with several college classes. The average cost of these installments carried on over several installments is about 15 cents each. So if you like the idea and want me to keep sending them, let me know. I plan to go ahead and get 2 installments of 10 pages each ready to send to you as soon as I hear from you. 3 installments would be 45 cents, which you can send in airmail stamps or ask your folks to send in stamps. Of course, if you're in the States, you can manage quite easily enough. I would rather that you did not send much more than 45 cents the first time, because if you did, I would feel obligated to go ahead and get out other installments, even though many had not paid their share of the cost. If there is a ready response, I shall continue these installments at the rate of at least 1 each month. I shall usually send 2 at a time, however. In fact, until I have gone through the whole list once, they will probably come faster than that. I hope this letter finds you in good health. I would certainly like to have some word from you. With best regards and best wishes, I am yours sincerely, Dad Jett, Daniel B. Jett, Dean of Engineering. Dean Jett began an effort in the 1930s to keep in contact with several of his former engineering students. He did this by writing newsletter and personal correspondence in order to keep in contact. When World War II broke out, Dean Jett expanded his letters to include men from the college who were serving in the military around the globe. As mentioned previously, a group of these men included the members of the ASTP program. Many of his students, of his regular students, called Dean Jett Dad Jett, and so a lot of their letters began off as Dad Jett, or just Dear Dad. And a lot of the ASTP students, even those who barely knew him, began addressing their letters to him the same way as Dad Jett. And so once he started sending out the newsletters to the addresses of the men that he got back several positive responses. And most of their letters started off the same way. Dear Dad Jett, yesterday I received the 4th and 5th installments of your letter and enjoyed catching up on the news of the fellows from State College. It has been some time since I heard or received an installment of the letter about the old ASTP man. If you are still sending out that letter, I would like to get a copy. Since I last wrote to you, I spent a few weeks lying around Shepherd Field, Texas, and then spent 10 days at San Bernardino, California. At present, I am about 120 miles from my home in Santa Cruz, so I am able to get home occasionally. I'm hoping that it won't be too long before I am permanent. When I am released from service, I rather expect to attend University of Minnesota to study civil engineering. Sincerely yours, Harold Z. Baer. But many of the letters from the students came from all over the world. They came from here within the States. They came from the Pacific. The majority of them came from the European theater. And it turned out that most of the men that were at State College ended up being part of the 12th Armored Division. And the 12th Armored Division, when they went overseas to the European front, ended up being in some of the bloodiest battles over there. And in the end, before Dean Jett finished sending out these newsletters, there was, out of the 830 students, 34 of them had been killed in the European front alone. And one of the things that he discovered just from his letters and the correspondence was that the ones that were in the Pacific War, none of the ASTP students were killed over there. There were some that had been wounded, but none of them had lost their lives over there. And so he thought it was very lucky on them, since towards the end of the war, that's where a lot of the bloodiest battles did end up coming from. But none of them ended up losing their lives. Also receiving letters from, not only from the students, but he also received letters from the families as well. And there's one that he received from Corporal Harry Beach's sister, and it says, Dear Sir, sorry I don't recall having received a request for my brother's address, but here it is. Corporal Harry Beach, Company B, 23rd Tank Battalion, APO 262, which it turns out was part of the 12th Armored Division. There isn't a great deal to say, but that he has been in some bitter battles. I'm interested in getting a pennant for him from New Mexico A&M. Could you tell me to whom I should write and what the price is? We'll be happy to send a check for same and postage. I know these boys will appreciate your letter that you are sending. Sincerely, Mary G. Beach. Dear Miss Beach, I owe you an apology for not answering your inquiry concerning the pennant. In normal times, it was very easy to obtain the pennant with the name of the school on them, but at the present time, they are not available. I sent a letter to Harry in March, but as yet, I have not received any reply from him. And his addresses are changing so fast, I would like to have his present address with recent news about him. Sincerely, Daniel B. Jett. And then on May 29th, 1945, she replied, Dear Mr. Jett, I received your letter today and thank you for saying. My brother Harry never let a letter go by unanswered, and I sincerely hope he got yours. Harry was killed in action in Germany March 31st, 1945, so that will explain no reply. We often thought he would like to attend your school after the war as he spoke so highly of it. Had he mentioned anything about this to you? He was such a swell boy, Mr. Jett, and had so much to live for, the best brother any girl could ask for. Really, his going is almost too much to bear, but there are so many others who have lost their boys, and we just can't say too much, I guess. I was always sorry you had to remind me the second time to send Harry's address, but I just can't remember the first card coming. I do hope he received your letter, and if he did, I know it meant a lot to him. With best wishes to you, I am sincerely Miss Mary G. Beach. And then she replied again on July 6, 1945. Dear Dean Jett, my mother and I certainly appreciated your kind letter about Harry and also want to thank you for sending us installment number 4. We were interested in seeing where these boys are now. I realize the time and effort you put forth in publishing this paper, and I'm sure all of the boys appreciate it. Thanking you, and with best wishes, I am sincerely yours, Miss Mary G. Beach. He had several letters like that from families just writing to him, letting them know that the reason why, that they either could not send an address because their son or husband or brother had been killed in action, or, as Hurst stated, that the reason why he never received a reply was because they had been killed in action. A lot of these soldiers, when they first came to State College back in 43, came from Texas A&M. And when I was going through the Roundup newspaper down there, they wrote several articles on them because their enrollment had been depleted with a lot of their own men being drafted to war. So a lot of it was taken over by the women that were left running the papers, the yearbooks, and all that. And so they managed to, after a while, at first these men were kind of resistant, and so they were complaining about, the regular students were complaining about how they were tired of listening every morning to hearing these men singing the school song for Texas A&M. And they said that, and so they confronted them about it, and they said, well, you know, Texas A&M made us feel welcomed. You guys haven't done anything to make us feel welcomed. So after that, it changed. And they got these men involved. They became part of the yearbook staff, and they became writing letters and putting their own opinions into the Roundup. And they ended up forming the basketball league because basketball had been terminated because they didn't have enough men to play. But they managed to convince the War Department to let them and other local ASTP groups form a basketball league and play against each other. And so the War Department finally consented and gave, you know, end to that. And New Mexico, the boys from State College ended up going undefeated that whole season. That was the first time that had ever happened for them down there. So they were quite proud of that. So by the time they left, when the ASTP program was disbanded through the War Department in 1944, when these men got sent overseas or wherever they got sent to, a lot of them would write back and say how much they really ended up missing New Mexico State, that they never realized what an impact Dean Jett had on them, or that the campus or the local people had on them. And so they would write back, you know, asking, you know, what happened to this professor? Is this professor still there? Can you please, you know, give them my regards? Or they would ask about other students. And there was, in a lot of his newsletters that he would send out to this class, ended up becoming a lot about the ASTP guys and where they were, what had happened to them, but mainly the addresses of where everybody was at. So that way, these men that wherever they were stationed at, if they were close by, they can go and visit their friends. And that's what a lot of them ended up doing. So it made them feel closer together and even more closer to New Mexico State. And so they would write back to Dean Jett that I found this person on the list that you gave me, or this person contacted me because my address was in the newsletter. And so I was able to hook up with him after not seeing him for a couple of years. And so that really meant a lot to each of them. And they would write back and just letting him know, just but really reminiscing. And there were two of the students that they ended up not being sent overseas because they got, actually was two of the few that got sent to Officer Candidate School. And while there, they actually wrote to Dean Jett complaining that they didn't want any information on the ASTB guys. They wanted more information on the campus, especially the girls. That's what they wanted information on, were all the girls that they went to school with and what happened to them. And so Dean Jett would write back in personal correspondence to them and let them know, well, this is what happened to this person, and would give out their addresses in the personal correspondence instead of putting it in the letter, so that way nobody else would know what they were asking for. And so that meant a lot to them. And then once, and so along with their letters, their parents would also write to Dean Jett, you know, because these men came from all over the United States. There were only 9 that were from within New Mexico that were part of this program, but the majority of them were from back east. And so a lot of their own parents started writing to Dean Jett, you know, thanking him for the wonderful job he was doing in boosting their morale with the newsletters and the personal correspondence. And a lot of times they would send money not only to cover their son's postage for that, but also to cover anybody else who didn't have the money to afford these newsletters. And so when somebody would write in and apologize for not writing or for not having the money, Dean Jett would say, well, that's okay. But Dean Jett would actually give acknowledgement to the people that did put in money and say, well, this person already covered your newsletters. And so that made them feel better knowing that they weren't going to receive these newsletters just because they didn't have the money to pay. Dean Jett didn't feel, you know, that they should be punished for not having the money. And so he still kept sending these newsletters to as many of these men as he possibly could. And there was one letter that I read where, and one of the things that he had asked was that if you're not interested in receiving these newsletters, please let him know so that way he would take them off their list. And there is this one guy who wrote back and said that he had no interest whatsoever. He didn't care about any of the guys he went to school with, and so could he please take his name off the list? So Dean Jett wrote him back and sent him a newsletter and thanked him for letting him know that he didn't want to be on the list anymore. And as a thank you for it, he was sending him another newsletter. And so, but that ended up being the last one he received. And so after that, there's no more correspondence between the two of them. And a lot of this, for a lot of these men, the correspondence continued even after the war ended. There was a letter as late as 1954 to where Dean Jett was still writing to some of these students that still kept in contact, that if he was in their part, if he's going to be in that part of the United States, he would let them know, I'll be here for this meeting or whatever, would you like to get together? And a lot of times they would jump at the chance to meet with Dean Jett. And so they would go and they would, you know, meet with him, and then they would write back and saying, you know, I really enjoyed the visit. Or Dean Jett would go and write to them and say, well, your dad happened to stop by to visit me. I had a chance to meet your parents. And so it really meant a lot to these soldiers while they were still fighting, you know, that their parents were actually taking an effort too and getting to learn who Dean Jett was. This past October, I had a chance to do an oral interview of one of Dean Jett's former students. He wasn't an ASTP. He actually grew up in Las Cruces and graduated from engineering down there. And so I asked him, I said, why was Dean Jett so popular with his students? Because in the yearbook down there, he had been voted several years as the most popular faculty staff. And so I asked Colonel Pickett why, and he said, because Dean Jett went out of his way for anybody. He goes, he didn't even have to be your professor. He just went out of his way to help you with anything, no matter what, whether it was school-related or anything. He spent more time at school just helping these students with their personal problems, with their school problems, and that's why he was so popular with all the students. And if you continued your education, like at a graduate school, I even came across a couple of letters from these ASTP men that actually went back and finished their education there because they were so impressed with Dean Jett and with Las Cruces and the campus that they went back there because they really liked it and wanted to get their education, to finish their education. And he would go, and if they wanted to go off to graduate school, I found a couple of letters to the deans of these other schools in other states highly recommending these students to for these programs, and they would get in just because of who he was and the type of person he was. And it turned out that he was well known in the engineering field all over the United States, that he ended up being president of the engineering organization. And so he had a lot of connections for these students. My PowerPoint presentation froze up, so I can't show you any of the pictures of the actual students, which I happen to have many. But one of the soldiers, he, and I had it up here, sent back a map at the end of the war that showed the 12th Armored Division and everywhere that they went. And they went all over Europe. I mean, starting in England and how they crossed over into France and went into Germany. I mean, they just went all over the place. But he also sent back pictures of a concentration camp that they came upon. And he actually, and I've read several letters from other students describing of the few that actually came upon concentration camps, just describing a little bit of what they saw. But he actually showed pictures. He sent back the pictures of what he actually did see, just to show Dean Jett just the atrocities that they had to face and what they were fighting for. And the pictures are quite disturbing, and I had a couple up there. They weren't the most disturbing ones that he sent back, but the program froze. I just wish I could have had a chance to show that up there. But Dean Jett, he became the Dean of Engineering during World War II because of the administration, a lot of them being called up for active duty and all that, so he became the dean. And even after he was forced to step down from being the dean because of his age, he still continued to teach. And even after he retired, he still kept, you know, correspondence with all of these students until his death. And just the amount of letters, I managed to transcribe and print out 281 pages of letters that I transcribed. And that's not even half of the letters that he wrote or that they wrote to him. And so I never got a chance to read all of these letters because of the limited amount of time that I had in research. But just some of the letters, I just wish that there was a way to publish all of these letters, because I think it's really important to get their story out there. Not only theirs, but how it impacted New Mexico and Dean Jett. Because at the same time, he had his own son, his only son, fighting over there too. So a lot of these students that were part of the ASTP knew his son, so they would always ask, "How is your son Danny doing?" So that also made Dean Jett feel really good, knowing that these students still remembered his son after 2 years of being gone and still cared enough to know about what was going on with him and with his family's life. But as I mentioned, there was so much research down there, and these letters, like I said, had been sitting down there in the archives for over 60 years before I accidentally came upon these letters. The other letters, they had been going through them for, from what I had been told, for about 5 years. So they knew about his other correspondence and all that. But these particular letters, and a lot of these letters are going to actually be included in a book that's being written by one of the archivists down there at the state that's due out in October. And originally, her book was just going to be on the actual students that were from Las Cruces that were there. And after she read some of my letters that I had transcribed, she said that my letters actually ended up being the best war letters that she had ever come across, because they gave a background history of what they did before they went to State College and what they did after State College, where they got sent to, what battles they were in. Like I said, they sent back pictures of some of the places they had actually been. So, and with the other students, when they wrote back, they didn't really talk about any of the battles. They would talk about, well, I was here and that was it. And then mainly it'd be about stuff about back home that they would write about. But these men actually wrote about the battles that they were in. And so we got a better understanding of what it was that they had to go through, you know, and how important and how it made it that much more important for Dean Jett's personal letters and these newsletters and what they meant to these men and how it really boosts their morale. And a lot of them would state over and over again in their letters to him. And I just really wish that I would have had more time to actually be able to go through all of these letters to get a more complete look at everything that he did. One of the pictures that I didn't have, and it was one of the few really touching stories, there are these two twins down there called the Mansell twins. Their names were Robert and Alan. And there was actually a write-up on them that I came across that was in the Roundup down there. And it was talking, they weren't identical, but they were talking about how they were so happy and so lucky to have been inducted into the Army at the same time, to have had all of their training, their boot camp, and all of their training together for not being split apart. And they were there in the ASTP program, but they did say that if they ever saw combat, they did not want to be in the same company. And unfortunately, the Army did keep them together. They were part of the 12th Armored Division fighting in Germany. No, they were fighting in France. And one of the brothers, Robert, wrote back and he told them that they had been out on patrol, two companies, and they lost contact with the other company that they were out on patrol with, and they ended up coming upon some Germans. They were ambushed by the Germans. And the Germans opened fire on them, and he watched his twin being killed. And he ended up being taken to a POW. And the mother didn't know anything. They just knew that she had gotten word that the one son had been killed. She didn't know anything about her other son. He ended up being a POW, and he was liberated after 4 months of being a POW. And he wrote to Dean Jett and told him what had happened. But that was all that he could. And even then, it was very brief, and he even told Dean Jett, I really can't talk about this. And so, it's that. For me and Martha and some of the others of us who read that letter, it was really hard, especially seeing the pictures of them and being able to put a face to these letters. To a lot of these letters made it even harder. And knowing the fates of some of these men made it really hard. But again, like I said, I wish that I would have had more time. And I really feel that the only way to do proper justice to the memories of all these men is to be able to publish all of their letters. And that's all that I have. Thank you.
Can we take some questions?
Yes. Are there any questions? He was from, I know he was originally from back east. I'm not exactly sure. I do know that he went to college, to Rawlings College in Missouri, I believe, was where he got his engineering degree. But I do know that he did serve in World War I, and I only know this because of his letters with the ASTP guys. I didn't find out any of this through his letters with the other students, but with the ASTP guys, he would let them know that, because they would write where they were fighting at, and he would tell them that, yes, he goes, I do know that place because I fought there during World War I. So that was an even more of a bond between him and these men. And after the war got out, after World War I ended and he got out, that's actually how he went to school and became an engineer. And I really don't know how he ended up down at State. But like I said, he was really popular. He came in the 19, in the early 1930s and was there until his death in the 1950s. So,
Ruth, I know that much of this research was an archival assessment of the letters. But if you do continue working on these letters in particular, what I would encourage is a critical analysis of what the letters are saying. One of the great opportunities that we have with personal letters, as opposed to the official letters that are being written by the military hierarchy, is in this case we have very probably personal assessments of the world that these students are seeing, that this military is seeing out there. And in other letters that we have now that have been transcribed and put into book form, we have scholars who are assessing those letters in terms of what they say. And I think because you have the opportunity here, not having looked at any of the letters myself, to see how the sentiment changes with time, I would love to hear how are these individuals who are fairly young really seeing the atrocities of war, right? How they're thinking about those things. And maybe we don't have those letters in this collection. Maybe, that angst. Oftentimes in these personal letters of military, we see what you would expect to see is patriotism. Mm-hmm. But from the military on the front lines, you're going to see anti-nationalism. Mm-hmm. And so it's essential, I think, particularly for you as a public history graduate student, to really get in and do a critical assessment of these letters, what they're saying, what they're not saying. And because you have that also from family members, parents, who shift, perhaps, because of all this death, right? And also how they're interacting with the world out there. How somebody faced with, you see this doing a lot with Latino letters during World War II, where you have a lot of individuals really seeing, we are fighting people that essentially look like us, and the angst that's created with that in Vietnam and other ones. So I don't know if you can speak to that because you've read a lot of those letters, see some of that critical assessment of that world that they're seeing out there, perhaps some issues of nationalism that get raised around those issues.
There were a couple of letters that I did come across where they were very upset with the military. They felt that everything was handled very poorly, that leadership over in these battles was very poorly. I have one here that I do happen to have marked, and he writes, "Dear Dad Jet, I'm sorry I haven't answered your letters before this, but they have been kicking me around Europe some, and even now I am not permanently stationed. I've been transferred out of the 103rd and am now in the 9th Division, but as I said, I am not sure I will stay here. I was in the Dachau concentration camp for about a week, which was anything but enjoyable. And whenever I first read that, I thought, well, maybe he was there just to tour the place or to liberate the prisoners that were there. But then I read on and it said, they made a mistake in transferring us in the first place, and they didn't know what to do with us, so they put us behind barbed wire till they found us what to do. The military made these men live in the concentration camp because they didn't know what to do with them. They didn't know where to place them. And he was very upset with it. And I also read a couple of other letters to where they were very upset with it. Turned out that they never should have been in the military to begin with because they should have been categorized as a 4F or they had something wrong with their eyes or whatever, but the military just ignored all that and inducted these men. And then once they got over there and had been through all this fighting and then they would have their physicals again, they would find out that, no, you should never have been inducted to begin with. And they would write back to their parents stating how angry that they were at the military for ruining. A lot of them felt that their lives were ruined by having to go and fight a war that they felt that they should have never been fighting to begin with, that they could have had a more productive life if they would have stayed within the United States. But yet then there were others that felt like once, depending on where they were, in what theater of war they were fighting in, they would write and say that they had no animosity towards who they were fighting. They felt that it was something that had to be done, and that in the end they hoped that everything would work out for the best for whoever came out ahead. And but a lot of them, and then a lot of, and some of them would also write saying that, you know, because of this war, they never would have had the chance to see the world the way that they did. And so in some ways, they were kind of grateful for that, in that aspect of the war breaking out. But a lot of them were just, a lot of them were angry being separated from their families, and or having their education disrupted, or losing their best friends, or having to see what they did. A lot of them were angry with the military for what they did. Yes.
Do you know what the policy was, military at that time, as to what the soldiers could write or not write about the battles they were in?
Yes, because a lot of these letters actually, there's some that came before the end of the European war saying that, you know, due to censorship, I cannot write anything. But once the censorship was written, that's where we really got the really detailed letters from the battles that they were in, what they saw. Or there was one that I read from one that he was actually stationed in the Philippines. And he wrote about the teletype machine, and that time it was a big secret in the military, so he could not write about any of it. But once the censorship was lifted, he wrote 5 pages on what this machine did, how it worked, I mean, the currents, I mean, everything that this machine did. And the first time that I read it, I was surprised that it got past censorship, because, I mean, he wrote in detail everything, how it was used in the war. And then whenever I went back to look at the date, it was because the war had already ended, so he was able to write about what it was that this machine did.
Did Dean Jett correspond with any women? Were there any women?
He did. The ASTP, it was only men that were in there, but with his other letters, there were, we have about 6 of them that were from New Mexico State that actually did serve in the military, and he did correspond with them. And one of them ended up becoming a pilot for the military, but because she was a woman, she couldn't actually become a fighter pilot, so her job was flying the transport cargo planes back and forth from the U.S. to England. That was her job. But he did correspond with a lot of the women that served in the military. And he also corresponded with a lot that weren't in the military. And with some of them, with the other group of letters with his regular students, that's how he would find out a lot about how those students were doing, is because their sisters or their wives or their mothers would actually let them know, well, you know, so-and-so is here and this is what he did. And you would find out more from them than from the actual student about what they did in the military. Any others? Okay, thank you very much.